out below her like an endless mirror that reflected the night sky. And like a mirror, it was solid and hard, and she could walk on it. She walked, smelling night air and wet leaves and the smell of the city, glittering in the far distance like a fairy castle wreathed in lights. And where she walked, spider webbing cracks fissured out from her footsteps and slivers of glass splashed up like water. The sky began to shine. It was alight with points of fire, like burning matchtips. They fell, a rain of hot coals from the sky, and she cowered, throwing up her arms. One fell just in front of her, a hurtling bonfire. But when it struck the ground, it became a boy. It was Jace, all in burning gold with his gold eyes and gold hair, and white gold wings sprouted from his back, wider and more thickly feathered than any bird's. He smiled like a cat and pointed behind her, and Clary turned to see that a dark-haired boy, was it Simon, was standing there, and wings spread from his back as well, feathered black as midnight, and each feather was tipped with blood. Clary woke up gasping. Her hands knotted in Jace's shirt. It was dark in the bedroom, the only light streaming from the narrow window beside the bed. She sat up. Her head felt heavy, and the back of her neck ached. She scanned the room slowly and jumped as a bright pinpoint of light, like a cat's eyes in the darkness, shone out at her. Jace was sitting in an armchair beside the bed. He was wearing jeans and a gray sweater, and his hair looked nearly dry. He was holding something in his hand that gleamed like metal. A weapon? Though what he might be guarding against here in the Institute, Clary couldn't guess.
Did you sleep well?
She nodded. Her mouth felt thick. Why didn't you wake me up?
I thought you could use a rest. Besides, you were sleeping like the dead. You even drooled, he added, on my shirt.
Clary's hand flew to her mouth. Sorry.
It's not often you get to see someone drool, Jace observed. Especially with such total abandon, mouth wide open and everything.
Oh, shut up. She felt around among the bed covers until she located her phone and checked it again, though she knew what it would say. No calls. It's 3 in the morning, she noted with dismay. Do you think Simon's all right?
I think he's weird, actually, said Jace. Though that has little to do with the time.
She shoved the phone into her jeans pocket. I'm going to change. Jace's white-painted bathroom was no bigger than Isabel's, though it was considerably neater. There wasn't much variation among the rooms in the Institute, Clary thought, closing the door behind her, but at least there was privacy. She shucked off her wet shirt and hung it on the towel rack, splashed water over her face, and ran a comb through her wildly curling hair. Jace's shirt was too big for her, but the material was soft against her skin. She rolled the sleeves up and went back into the bedroom, where she found Jace sitting exactly where he had been before, staring moodily down at the glinting object in his hands. She leaned on the back of the armchair. What is that? Instead of answering, he turned it over so that she could see it properly. It was a jagged piece of broken glass, but instead of reflecting her own face, it held an image of green grass and blue sky and the bare black branches of trees. I didn't know you kept that, she said. That piece of the portal.
It's why I wanted to come here, he said, to get this.
Longing and loathing were mixed in his voice.
I keep thinking maybe I'll see my father in a reflection, figure out what he's up to.
But he's not there, is he? I thought he was somewhere here in the city. Jace shook his head.
Magnus has been looking for him, and he doesn't think so.
Magnus has been looking for him? I didn't know that. How?
Magnus didn't get to be High Warlock for nothing. His power extends through the city and beyond. He can sense what's out there, to an extent.
Clary snorted.
He can feel disturbances in the Force?
Jace slewed around in the chair and frowned at her.
I'm not joking. After that warlock was killed down in Tribeca, he started looking into it. When I went to stay with him, he asked me for something of my father's to make the tracking easier. I gave him the Morgenstern ring. He said he'd let me know if he senses Valentine anywhere in the city, but so far he hasn't.
Maybe he just wanted your ring, Clary said. He sure wears a lot of jewelry.
He can have it.
Jace's hand tightened around the bit of mirror in his grasp.
Clary noted with alarm the blood welling up around the jagged edges where they cut into his skin.
It's worthless to me.
Hey, she said, and leaned down to take the glass out of his hand. Easy there. She slid the piece of portal into the pocket of his jacket where it hung on the wall. The edges of the glass were dark with blood, Jace's palms scored with red lines. Maybe we should get you back to Magnus's, she said as gently as she could. Alec's been there a long time, and...
I doubt he minds somehow, Jace said.
But he stood up obediently enough and reached for his stele, which was propped against the wall. As he drew a healing rune on the back of his bleeding right hand, he said,
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
And what's that?
When you got me out of the cell in the Silent City, how did you do it? How did you unlock the door?
Oh, I just used a regular opening rune and...
She was interrupted by a harsh tolling ring and clapped her hand to her pocket before she realized that the sound she'd heard was much louder and sharper than any sound her phone could make. She looked around in confusion.
That's the Institute's doorbell, Jay said, grabbing his jacket. Come on.
They were halfway to the foyer when Isabel burst out of her own bedroom door, wearing a cotton bathrobe, a pink silk sleep mask pushed up on her forehead, and a semi-dazed expression.
It's 3 in the morning,
she said to them, in a tone that suggested that this was all Jace's or possibly Clary's fault.
Who's ringing our doorbell at 3 in the morning?
Maybe it's the Inquisitor, Clary said, feeling suddenly cold.
She could get in on her own, said Jace. Any shadow hunter could. The Institute is only closed to mundanes and downworlders.
Clary felt her heart contract. Simon, she said. It must be him.
Oh, for goodness sake, yawned Isabel. Is he really waking us up at this ungodly hour just to prove his love to you or something? Couldn't he have called? Mundane men are such twits.
They had reached the foyer, which was empty. Max must have gone to bed on his own. Isabel stalked across the room and toggled a switch on the far wall. Somewhere inside the cathedral, a distant rumbling thump was audible. There, Isabel said. Elevator's on its way.
I can't believe he didn't have the dignity and presence of mind just to get drunk and pass out in some gutter, said Jace. I must say, I'm disappointed in the little fellow.
Clary barely heard him. A rising sense of fear made her blood slow and thick. She remembered her dream, the angels, the ice, Simon with his bleeding wings. She shivered. Isabel looked at her sympathetically.
It is cold in here, she observed.
She reached up and took down what looked like a blue velvet coat from one of the coat hooks. Here, she said, put this on. Clary slid the coat on and drew it close around her. It was too long, but it was warm. It had a hood, too, lined with satin. Clary pushed it back so she could see the elevator doors opening. They opened on a hollow box whose mirrored sides reflected her own pale and startled face. Without a pause for thought, she stepped inside. Isabel looked at her in confusion.
What are you doing?
It's Simon down there, Clary said. I know it is.
But...
Suddenly Jace was beside Clary, holding the doors open for Isabel.
Come on, Izzy, he said.
With a theatrical sigh, she followed. Clary tried to catch his eye as the three of them rode down in silence, Isabel pinning up the last long coil of her hair, but Jace wouldn't look at her. He was looking at himself sidelong in the elevator mirror, whistling softly under his breath as he always did when he was nervous. She remembered the slight tremor in his touch as he had taken hold of her in the Sealy Court. She thought of the look on Simon's face, and then of him almost running to get away from her, vanishing into the shadows at the edge of the park. There was a knot of dread inside her chest, and she didn't know why. The elevator doors opened onto the nave of the cathedral, alive with the dancing light of candles. She pushed past Jace in her hurry to get out of the elevator and practically ran down the narrow aisle between the pews. She stumbled on the dragging edge of her coat and bunched it up impatiently in her hand before dashing to the wide double doors. On the inside, they were barred with bronze bolts the size of Clary's arms. As she reached for the highest bolt, the bell rang through the church again. She heard Isabel whisper something to Jace, and then Clary was hauling on the bolt, dragging it back, and she felt Jace's hand over hers,
helping her pull the heavy doors open.
Night air swept in, guttering the candles in their brackets. The air smelled of city, of salt and fumes, cooling concrete and garbage, and underneath those familiar smells, the scent of copper, like the tang of a new penny. At first, Clary thought the steps were empty. Then she blinked and saw Raphael standing there, his head of black curls tousled by the night breeze, his white shirt open at the neck to show the scar in the hollow of his throat. In his arms, he held a body. That was all Clary saw as she stared at him in bewilderment. A body. Someone very dead. Arms and legs dangling like limp ropes, head fallen back to expose the mangled throat. She felt Jace's hand tighten around her arm like a vice, and only then did she look more closely and see the familiar corduroy jacket with its torn sleeve, the blue t-shirt underneath now stained and spotted with blood, and she screamed. The scream made no sound. Clary felt her knees give and would have slid to the ground if Jace hadn't been holding her up. "Don't look," he said in her ear. "For God's sake, don't look." But she couldn't not look at the blood matting Simon's brown hair, his torn throat, the gashes along his dangling wrists. Black spots dotted her vision as she fought for breath. It was Isabel who snatched one of the empty candelabras from the side of the door and aimed it at Raphael as if it were an enormous three-pointed spear. "What have you done to Simon?" For that moment, her voice clear and commanding, she sounded exactly like her mother. "El no es muerto," Raphael said, in a flat and emotionless voice, and laid Simon down on the ground almost at Clary's feet with a surprising gentleness. She had forgotten how strong he must be. He had a vampire's unnatural strength despite his slightness. In the light of the candles that spilled through the doorway, Clary could see that Simon's shirt was soaked through at the front with blood. "Did you say—" she began.
"He isn't dead," Jay said, holding her tighter. "He's not dead."
She pulled away from him with a hard jerk and went to her knees on the concrete. She felt no disgust at touching Simon's bloodied skin as she slid her hands under his head, pulling him up into her lap. She felt only the terrified childish horror she remembered from being 5 years old and having broken her mother's priceless Liberty lamp. "Nothing," said a voice in the back of her head, "will put these pieces back together again."
"Simon," she whispered, touching his face. His glasses were gone. "Simon, it's me."
"He can't hear you," said Raphael. "He's dying." Her head jerked up.
"But you said—"
"I said he was not dead yet," said Raphael. "But in a few minutes, 10 perhaps, his heart will slow and stop. Already he is beyond seeing or hearing anything."
Her arms tightened around him involuntarily. "We have to get him to a hospital, or call Magnus."
"They can't do him any good," said Raphael. "You don't understand."
"No," said Jace, his voice as soft as silk tipped with needle-sharp points. "We don't. And perhaps you should explain yourself. Because otherwise I'm going to assume you're a rogue bloodsucker and cut your heart out, like I should have done last time we met."
Raphael smiled at him without amusement. "You swore not to harm me, Shadow Hunter. Have you forgotten?"
"I didn't," said Isabel, brandishing the candelabra.
Raphael ignored her. He was still looking at Jace. "I remember that night you broke into the Demor looking for your friend. It is why I brought him here," and he gestured at Simon. "When I found him in the hotel, instead of letting the others drink him to death. You see, he broke in, without permission, and therefore was fair game for us. But I kept him alive, knowing he was yours. I have no wish for a war with the Nephilim."
"He broke in?" Clary said in disbelief. "Simon would never do anything that stupid and crazy."
"But he did," said Raphael, with the faintest trace of a smile, "because he was afraid he was becoming one of us, and he wanted to know if the process could be reversed. You might remember that when he was in the form of a rat, and you came to fetch him from us, he bit me."
"Very enterprising of him," said Jace. "I approved."
"Perhaps," said Raphael. "In any case, he took some of my blood into his mouth when he did it. You know that is how we pass our powers to each other, through the blood."
"Through the blood?" Clary remembered Simon jerking away from the vampire film on TV, wincing at the sunlight in McCarran Park. "He thought he was turning into one of you," she said. "He went to the hotel to see if it was true."
"Yes," said Raphael. "The pity of it is that the effects of my blood would probably have faded over time had he done nothing. But now..."
He gestured at Simon's limp body expressively.
"Now what?" said Isabel, with a hard edge to her voice. "Now he'll die?"
"And rise again. Now he will be a vampire."
The candelabra tipped forward as Isabel's eyes widened in shock.
"What?"
Jace caught the makeshift weapon before it hit the floor. When he turned to Raphael, his eyes were bleak.
"You're lying."
"Wait and see," said Raphael. "He will die and rise as one of the night children. That is also why I came. Simon is one of mine now."
There was nothing in his voice, no sorrow or pleasure. But Clary could not help but wonder what hidden glee he might feel at having so opportunely lucked into an effective bargaining chip.
"There's nothing that can be done, no way to reverse it?" demanded Isabel, panic tinging her voice.
Clary thought distantly that it was strange that these two, Jace and Isabel, who did not love Simon the way she did, were the ones doing all the talking. But perhaps they were speaking for her precisely because she couldn't bear to say a word.
"You could cut off his head and burn his heart in a fire, but I doubt that you will do that."
"No!" Clary's arms tightened around Simon. "Don't you dare hurt him!"
"I have no need to," said Raphael.
"I wasn't talking to you."
Clary didn't look up.
"Don't you even think about it, Jace. Don't even think about it."
There was silence. She could hear Isabel's worried intake of breath, and Raphael, of course, did not breathe at all. Jace hesitated a moment before he said,
"Clary, what would Simon want? Is this what he'd want for himself?"
She jerked her head up. Jace was looking down at her, the three-pronged metal candelabra still in his hand, and suddenly an image flashed across her mental landscape of Jace holding Simon down and plunging the sharp end of it into his chest, making the blood splash up like a fountain.
"Get away from us!"
she screamed suddenly, so loudly that she saw the distant figures walking along the avenue in front of the cathedral turn and look behind them, as if startled at the noise. Jace went white to the roots of his hair, so white that his wide eyes looked like gold discs, inhuman and weirdly out of place. He said,
"Clary, you don't think..."
Simon gasped suddenly. Arching upward in Clary's grasp, she screamed again and caught at him, pulling him up toward her. His eyes were wide and blind and terrified. He reached up. She wasn't sure if he was trying to touch her face or claw at her, not knowing who she was.
"It's me," she said, gently pushing his hand down to his chest, lacing their fingers together. "Simon, it's me. It's Clary."
Her hand slipped on his. When she looked down, she saw they were wet with blood from his shirt and from the tears that had slid down her face without her noticing.
"Simon, I love you," she said.
His hands tightened on hers. He breathed out, a harsh, ratcheting sound, and then did not breathe in again.
"I love you. I love you. I love you."
Her last words to Simon seemed to echo in Clary's ears as he went limp in her grasp. Isabel was suddenly next to her, saying something in her ear, but Clary couldn't hear her. The sound of rushing water, like an oncoming tidal wave, filled her ears. She watched as Isabel tried gently to pry her hands away from Simon's and couldn't. Clary was surprised. She didn't feel like she was holding on to him that tightly. Giving up, Isabel got to her feet and turned angrily on Raphael. She was shouting. Halfway through her tirade, Clary's hearing switched back on, like a radio that had finally found a station within range.
"And now what are we supposed to do?" Isabel screamed.
"Bury him," said Raphael.
The candelabra swung up again in Jace's hand.
"That's not funny."
"It isn't supposed to be," said the vampire, unfazed. "It is how we are made. We are drained, blooded, and buried. When he digs his own way out of a grave, that is when a vampire is born."
Isabel made a faint sound of disgust.
"I don't think I could do that."
"Some can't," said Raphael.
If no one is there to help him dig out, they stay like that, trapped like rats under the earth.
A sound tore its way out of Clary's throat. A sob that was as raw as a scream. She said,
I won't put him in the ground.
Then he'll stay like this, said Raphael mercilessly. Dead, but not quite dead. Never waking.
They were all staring down at her, Isabel and Jace, as if they were holding their breaths, waiting on her response. Raphael looked incurious, almost bored.
You didn't come into the Institute because you can't, isn't that right? Clary said. Because it's holy ground and you're unholy.
That's not exactly, Jace began, but Raphael cut him off with a gesture.
I should tell you, said the vampire boy, that there is not much time. The longer we wait before putting him into the ground, the less likely he'll be able to dig his own way back out of it.
Clary looked down at Simon. He really would look as if he were sleeping, if it weren't for the long gashes along his bare skin.
We can bury him, she said, but I want it to be in a Jewish cemetery. And I want to be there when he wakes up.
Raphael's eyes glittered.
It will not be pleasant.
Nothing ever is. She set her jaw. Let's get going. We only have a few hours until dawn.
Chapter 10. A Fine and Private Place.
The cemetery was in the outskirts of Queens, where apartment buildings gave way to rows of orderly-looking Victorian houses painted gingerbread colors, pink, white, and blue. The streets were wide and mostly deserted, the avenue leading up to the cemetery unlit except by a single streetlight. It took them a short while with their steles to break in through the locked gates, and another while to find a spot hidden enough for Raphael to begin digging. It was at the top of a low hill, sheltered from the road below by a thick line of trees. Clary, Jace, and Isabel were protected with glamour, but there was no way to hide Raphael, or to hide Simon's body, so the trees provided a welcome cover. The sides of the hill not facing the road were thickly layered with headstones, many of them bearing a pointed Star of David at the top. They gleamed white and smooth as milk in the moonlight. In the distance was a lake, its surface pleated with glittering ripples. A nice place, Clary thought. A good place to come and lay flowers on someone's grave, to sit a while and think about their life, what they meant to you. Not a good place to come at night, under cover of darkness, to bury your friend in a shallow dirt grave without the benefit of a coffin or a service.
Did he suffer? She asked Raphael.
He looked up from his digging, leaning on the handle of the shovel like the gravedigger in Hamlet.
What? Simon, did he suffer? Did the vampires hurt him?
No. The blood death is not such a bad way to die, said Raphael, his musical voice soft. The bite drugs you. It is pleasant, like going to sleep.
A wave of dizziness passed over her, and for a moment she thought she might faint.
Clary, Jace's voice snapped her out of her reverie. Come on. You don't have to watch this.
He held out his hand to her. Looking past him, she could see Isabel standing with her whip in her hand. They had wrapped Simon's body in a blanket, and it lay on the ground at her feet, as if she were guarding it. Not it, Clary reminded herself fiercely. Him. Simon.
I want to be here when he wakes up.
I know. We'll come right back.
When she didn't move, Jace took her unresisting arm and drew her away from the clearing and down the side of the hill. There were boulders here, just above the first line of graves. He sat down on one, zipping up his jacket. It was surprisingly chilly out. For the first time this season, Clary could see her breath when she exhaled. She sat down on the boulder beside Jace and stared down at the lake. She could hear the rhythmic thump-thump of Raphael's spade hitting the dirt, and the shoveled dirt hitting the ground. Raphael wasn't human. He worked fast. It wouldn't take that long for him to dig a grave. And Simon wasn't all that big a person. The grave wouldn't have to be that deep. A stab of pain twisted through her abdomen. She bent forward, hand splayed across her stomach.
I feel sick.
I know. That's why I brought you out here. You look like you were going to throw up on Raphael's feet.
She made a soft groaning noise.
Might have wiped the smirk off his face, Jace observed reflectively. There's that to consider.
Shut up.
The pain had eased.
She tipped her head back, looking up at the moon, a circle of chipped silver polish floating in a sea of stars. This is my fault.
It's not your fault.
You're right. It's our fault. Jace turned toward her, exasperation clear in the lines of his shoulders.
How do you figure that?
She looked at him silently for a moment. He needed a haircut. His hair curled the way vines did when they got too long, in looping tendrils, the color of white gold in the moonlight. The scars on his face and throat looked like they'd been etched there with metallic ink. He was beautiful, she thought miserably. Beautiful. And there was nothing there in him, not an expression, not a slant of cheekbone, or shape of jaw, or curve of lips that bespoke any family resemblance to herself or her mother at all. He didn't even really look like Valentine.
What? He said. Why are you looking at me like that?
She wanted to throw herself into his arms and sob at the exact same time that she wanted to pound on him with her fists. Instead, she said, If it weren't for what happened in the fairy court, Simon would still be alive. He reached down and savagely yanked a hunk of grass out of the ground. Dirt still clung to the roots. He tossed it aside.
We were forced to do what we did. It's not as if we did it for fun or to hurt him. Besides, he said with the ghost of a smile, you're my sister.
Don't say it like that.
What, sister?
He shook his head. When I was a little kid, I realized that if you say any word over and over fast enough, it loses all its meaning. I'd lie awake saying the words over and over to myself. Sugar, mirror, whisper, dark.
Sister, he said softly. You're my sister.
It doesn't matter how many times you say it. It'll still be true.
And it doesn't matter what you won't let me say. That'll still be true, too.
Jace! Another voice calling his name. It was Alec, slightly out of breath from running. He was holding a black plastic bag in one hand. Behind him stalked Magnus, impossibly tall and thin and glowering in a long leather coat that flapped in the wind like a bat's wing. Alec came to a stop in front of Jace and held out the bag. I brought blood, he said, like you asked. Jace opened the top of the bag, peered in, and wrinkled his nose.
Do I want to ask you where you got this?
From a butcher shop in Greenpoint, said Magnus, joining them. They bleed their meat to make it halal. It's animal blood.
Blood is blood, said Jace, and stood up.
He looked down at Clary and hesitated.
When Raphael said this wouldn't be pleasant, he wasn't lying. You can stay here. I'll send Isabel down to wait with you.
She tipped her head back to look at him. The moonlight cast the shadow of branches across his face. Have you ever seen a vampire rise?
No, but I...
Then you don't really know, do you? She stood up, and Isabel's blue coat fell around her in rustling folds. I want to be there. I have to be there. She could see only part of his face in the shadows, but she thought he looked almost impressed.
I know better than to tell you there's anything you can't do, he said. Let's go.
Raphael was tamping down a large rectangle of dirt when they came back into the clearing. Jace and Clary, a little ahead of Magnus and Alec, who seemed to be arguing about something. Simon's body was gone. Isabel was sitting on the ground, her whip coiled at her ankles in a golden circle. She was shivering. Jesus, it's cold, Clary said, pulling Isabel's heavy coat close around her. The velvet was warm, at least. She tried to ignore the fact that the hem of it was stained with Simon's blood. It's as if it turned to winter overnight.
Be glad it isn't winter, said Raphael, setting the spade against the trunk of a nearby tree. The ground freezes like iron in winter. Sometimes it is impossible to dig, and the fledgling must wait months, starving underground before he can be born.
Is that what you call them? Fledglings? Said Clary. The word seemed wrong. Too friendly somehow. It reminded her of ducklings.
Yes, said Raphael. It means the not yet or newly born.
He caught sight of Magnus then, and for a split second looked surprised before he wiped the expression carefully from his features.
Hi, Warlock, he said. I hadn't expected to see you here.
I was curious, said Magnus, his cat eyes glittering. I've never seen one of the Night Children rise.
Raphael glanced at Jace, who was lounging against a tree trunk.
You keep surprisingly illustrious company, Shadowhunter.
Are you talking about yourself again? Asked Jace.
He smoothed the churned dirt with the tip of a boot.
That seems boastful.
Maybe he meant me, said Alec.
Everyone looked at him in surprise. Alec so rarely made jokes. He smiled nervously.
Sorry, he said. Nerves.
There's no need for that, said Magnus, reaching to touch Alec's shoulder.
Alec moved quickly out of range, and Magnus's outstretched hand fell to his side.
So what do we do now? Clary demanded, hugging herself for warmth. Cold seemed to have seeped into every pore of her body. Surely it was too cold for late summer.
Raphael, noticing her gesture, smiled minutely.
It is always cold at the rising, he said. The fledgling draws strength from the living things that surround it, taking from them the energy to rise.
Clary glared at him resentfully. You don't seem cold.
I'm not living.
He stepped back a little from the edge of the grave. Clary forced herself to think of it as a grave, since that's exactly what it was, and gestured to the others to do the same.
Make room, he said. Simon can hardly rise if you are all standing on top of him.
They moved hastily backward. Clary found Isabel clutching her elbow and turned to see that the other girl was white to the lips.
What's wrong?
Everything, Isabel said.
Clary, maybe we should have just let him go.
Let him die, you mean? Clary jerked her arm out of Isabel's grip. Of course that's what you think. You think everyone who isn't just like you is better off dead anyway.
Isabel's face was a picture of misery.
That isn't...
A sound tore through the clearing. A sound unlike any Clary had ever heard before. A sort of pounding rhythm coming from deep underground, as if suddenly the heartbeat of the world had become audible.
What's happening? Clary thought.
And then the ground buckled and heaved under her. She fell to her knees. The grave was roiling like the surface of an unsteady ocean. Ripples appeared in its surface. Suddenly it burst apart, clods of dirt flying. A small mountain of dirt, like an anthill, heaved itself upward. At the center of the mountain was a hand, fingers splayed, clawing at the dirt.
Simon!
Clary tried to rush forward, but Raphael yanked her back.
Let me go!
She tried to pull herself free, but Raphael's grip was like steel.
Can't you see he needs our help?
He should do this himself, Raphael said, without loosening his hold on her. It is better that way.
It's your way. It's not mine.
She jerked herself out of his grip and ran toward the grave, just as it heaved upward, hurling her back to the ground. A hunched shape was forcing itself out of the hastily dug grave. Fingers like filthy claws sunk deep into the earth. Its bare arms were streaked black with dirt and blood. It tore itself free of the sucking earth, crawled a few feet, and collapsed onto the ground.
Simon, she whispered, because of course it was Simon. Simon, not an it.
She scrambled to her feet and ran toward him, her sneakers sinking deep into the churned earth.
Clary, Jay shouted, what are you doing?
She stumbled, her ankle twisting as her leg sank into the dirt. She fell onto her knees next to Simon, who lay as still as if he really were dead. His hair was filthy and matted with clots of dirt, his glasses gone, his t-shirt torn down the side, blood on the skin that showed under it.
Simon, she said, and reached to touch his shoulder. Simon, are you?
His body tensed under her fingers, every muscle tightening, his skin hard as iron.
All right, she finished.
He turned his head, and she saw his eyes. They were blank, lifeless. With a sharp cry, he rolled over and sprang at her, swift as a striking snake. He struck her squarely, knocking her back into the dirt.
Simon!
She shouted, but he didn't seem to hear. His face was twisted, unrecognizable as he loomed up over her, his lips curling back, and she saw his sharp canines, the fang teeth, gleam in the moonlight like white bone needles. Suddenly terrified, she kicked out at him, but he grabbed her shoulders and forced her back down into the dirt. His hands were bloody, the nails broken, but he was incredibly strong, stronger even than her own Shadow Hunter muscles. The bones in her shoulders ground together painfully as he bent down over her and was plucked away and sent flying, as if he weighed no more than a pebble.
Clary shot to her feet, gasping, and met Raphael's grim gaze. I told you to stay away from him, he said, and turned to kneel down by Simon, who had landed a short distance away and was curled, twitching on the ground.
Clary sucked in a breath. It sounded like a sob. He doesn't know me.
He knows you. He doesn't care. Raphael looked over his shoulder at Jace. He is starving. He needs blood.
Jace, who had been standing white-faced and frozen at the grave's edge, stepped forward and held out the plastic bag mutely, like an offering. Raphael snatched it and tore it open. A number of plastic packets of red fluid fell out. He seized one, muttering, and tore it open with sharp nails, spattering blood down the front of his dirt-stained white shirt. Simon, as if scenting the blood, curled up and let out a piteous wail. He was still twitching, his broken nailed hands gouged at the dirt and his eyes were rolled back to the whites. Raphael held out the blood packet, letting some of the red fluid drip onto Simon's face, streaking the white skin with scarlet.
There you go, he said almost in a croon. Drink, little fledgling, drink.
And Simon, who had been a vegetarian since he was 10 years old, who wouldn't drink milk that wasn't organic, who fainted at the sight of needles. Simon snatched the packet of blood out of Raphael's thin brown hand and tore into it with his teeth. He swallowed the blood in a few gulps and tossed the packet aside with another wail. Raphael was ready with the second one and pressed it into his hand.
Do not drink too fast, he cautioned. You will make yourself sick.
Simon, of course, ignored him. He had managed to get the second packet open without help and was gulping greedily at the contents. Blood ran from the corners of his mouth down his throat and spattered his hands with fat red drops. His eyes were closed. Raphael turned to look at Clary. She could feel Jay staring at her too, and the others, all with identical expressions of horror and disgust.
Next time he feeds, Raphael said calmly, it will not be quite so messy.
Messy?
Clary turned away and stumbled out of the clearing, hearing Jace call out for her but ignoring him, starting to run when she reached the trees. She was halfway down the hill when the pain hit. She went to her knees, gagging, as everything in her stomach came up in a wrenching flood. When it was over, she crawled a short distance away and collapsed against the ground. She knew she was probably lying on someone's grave, but she didn't care. She rested her hot face against the cool dirt and thought, for the first time, that maybe the dead weren't so unlucky after all. Chapter 11 Smoke and Steel. The critical care unit of Beth Israel Hospital always reminded Clary of photos she'd seen of Antarctica. It was cold and remote feeling, and everything was either gray, white, or pale blue. The walls of her mother's room were white. The tubes that snaked around her head and the endless beeping banks of instruments around the bed were gray, and the blanket pulled up around her chest was pale blue. Her face was white. The only color in the room was her red hair, flaring across the snowy expanse of pillow like a bright, incongruous flag planted at the South Pole. Clary wondered how Luke was managing to pay for this private room, where the money had come from and how he'd gotten it. She supposed she could ask him when he got back from buying vending machine coffee in the ugly little cafe on the third floor. The coffee from the machine down there looked like tar and tasted like it too, but Luke seemed addicted to the stuff. The metal legs of the bedside chair squeaked across the floor as Clary pulled it out and sat down slowly, smoothing her skirt down over her legs. Whenever she came to see her mother in the hospital, she felt nervous and dry-mouthed, as if she were about to get in trouble for something. Maybe because the only time she'd ever seen her mother's face like this, flat and without animation, was when her mother was about to explode with rage. Mom, she said. She reached out and took her mother's left hand. There was a puncture mark on the wrist still, where Valentine had shoved one end of a tube. The skin of her mother's hand, always rough and chapped, spattered with paint and turpentine, felt like the dry bark of a tree. Clary folded her fingers around Jocelyn's, feeling a hard lump come into her throat.
Mom,
She cleared her throat.
Luke says you can hear me. I don't know if that's true or not. Anyway, I came because I needed to talk to you. It's okay if you can't say anything back. See, the thing is, it's...
She swallowed again and looked toward the window, the strip of blue sky visible at the edge of the brick wall that faced the hospital.
It's Simon. Something's happened to him. Something that was my fault.
Now that she wasn't looking at her mother's face, the story poured out of her, all of it. How she'd met Jace and the other shadow hunters, the search for the mortal cup, Hodge's betrayal, and the battle at Renwick's, the realization that Valentine was her father, as well as Jace's. More recent events, too. The nighttime visit to the Bone City, the Soul Sword, the Inquisitor's hatred of Jace, and the woman with the silver hair. And then she told her mother about the Seely Court, about the price the Queen had demanded, and what had happened to Simon afterward. She could feel tears burn in her throat while she talked, but it was a relief to tell it, to unburden herself to someone, even someone who, probably, couldn't hear her. "So, basically," she said, "I've screwed everything up royally. I remember you saying that growing up happens when you start having things you look back on and wish you could change. I guess that means I've grown up now. It's just that I thought you'd be there when I did." She choked on tears just as someone behind her cleared his throat. Clary wheeled around and saw Luke standing in the doorway, a styrofoam cup in his hand. Under the hospital's fluorescent lights, she could see how tired he looked. There was gray in his hair, and his blue flannel shirt was rumpled. "How long have you been standing there?"
"Not long," he said. "I brought you some coffee."
He held out the cup, but she waved it away.
"I hate that stuff. It tastes like feet."
At that, he smiled.
"How would you know what feet taste like?"
"I just know."
She leaned forward and kissed Jocelyn's cold cheek before standing up.
"Bye, Mom."
Luke's blue pickup was parked in the concrete lot under the hospital. They had pulled out onto the FDR highway before he spoke.
"I heard what you said back at the hospital."
"I thought you were eavesdropping."
She spoke without anger. There was nothing in what she'd said to her mother that Luke couldn't know.
"What happened to Simon wasn't your fault."
She heard the words, but they seemed to bounce off her as if there were an invisible wall surrounding her. Like the wall Hodge had built around her when he'd betrayed her to Valentine. But this time she couldn't hear anything through it, couldn't feel anything through it either. She was as numb as if she'd been encased in ice.
"Did you hear me, Clary?"
"It's a nice thing to say, but of course it was my fault. Everything that happened to Simon was my fault."
"Because he was angry at you when he went back to the hotel?" "He didn't go back to the hotel because he was angry at you, Clary. I've heard of situations like this before. They call them darklings, those who are half-turned. He would have felt drawn back to the hotel by a compulsion he couldn't control."
"Because he had Raphael's blood in him. But that would never have happened either if it weren't for me, if I hadn't brought him to that party."
"You thought it would be safe there. You weren't putting him in any danger you hadn't put yourself in. You can't torture yourself like this," said Luke, turning onto the Brooklyn Bridge.
The water slid by under them in sheets of silvery gray.
"There's no point to it."
She slumped lower in her seat, curling her fingers into the sleeves of her knitted green hoodie. Its edges were frayed, and the yarn tickled her cheek.
"Look," Luke went on, "in all the years I've known him, there's always been exactly one place Simon wanted to be, and he's always fought like hell to make sure he got there and stayed there."
"Where's that?"
"Wherever you were," said Luke. "Remember when you fell out of that tree on the farm when you were 10 and broke your arm? Remember how he made them let him ride with you in the ambulance on the way to the hospital? He kicked and yelled till they gave in."
"You laughed," said Clary, remembering, "and my mom hit you in the shoulder."
"It was hard not to laugh. Determination like that in a 10-year-old is something to see. He was like a pit bull."
"If pit bulls wore glasses and were allergic to ragweed."
"You can't put a price on that kind of loyalty," said Luke, more seriously.
"I know. Don't make me feel worse."
"Clary, I'm telling you he made his own decisions. What you're blaming yourself for is being what you are. And that's no one's fault, and nothing you can change. You told him the truth, and he made up his own mind what he wanted to do about that. Everyone has choices to make. No one has the right to take those choices away from us, not even out of love."
"But that's just it," Clary said. "When you love someone, you don't have a choice."
She thought of the way her heart had contracted when Isabel had called to tell her Jace was missing. She'd left the house without a moment's thought or hesitation. Love takes your choices away.
It's a lot better than the alternative.
Luke guided the truck onto Flatbush. Clary didn't reply, just gazed dully out the window. The area just off the bridge was not one of the prettier parts of Brooklyn. Either side of the avenue was lined with ugly office buildings and auto body shops. Normally, she hated it, but right now the surroundings suited her mood.
So, have you heard from...
Luke began, apparently deciding it was time to change the subject.
Simon? Yes, you know I have.
Actually, I was going to say Jace.
Oh.
Jace had called her cell phone several times and left messages. She hadn't picked up or called him back. Not talking to him was her penance for what had happened to Simon. It was the worst way she could think to punish herself.
No, I haven't.
Luke's voice was carefully neutral.
You might want to, just to see if he's all right. He's probably having a pretty bad time of it, considering.
Clary shifted in her seat.
I thought you checked in with Magnus. I heard you talking to him about Valentine, and the whole reversing the soul sword thing. I'm sure he'd tell you if Jace wasn't okay.
Magnus can reassure me about Jace's physical health. His mental health, on the other hand.
Forget it. I'm not calling Jace.
Clary heard the coldness in her own voice and was almost shocked at herself.
I have to be there for Simon right now. It's not like his mental health is so great either.
Luke sighed.
If he's having trouble coming to terms with his condition, maybe he should...
Of course he's having trouble!
She shot Luke an accusing look, though he was concentrating on traffic and didn't notice.
You of all people ought to understand what it's like to...
Wake up a monster one day?
Luke didn't sound bitter, just weary.
You're right. I do understand. And if he ever wants to talk to me, I'd be happy to tell him all about it. He will get through this, even if he thinks he won't.
Clary frowned. The sun was setting just behind them, making the rearview mirror shine like gold. Her eyes stung from the brightness.
It's not the same, she said. At least you grew up knowing werewolves were real. Before he can tell anyone he's a vampire, he'll have to convince them that vampires exist in the first place.
Luke looked as if he were about to say something, then changed his mind.
I'm sure you're right.
They were in Williamsburg now, driving down half-empty Kent Avenue, warehouses rising above them on either side.
Still, I got him something. It's in the glove compartment, just in case.
Clary snapped the compartment open and frowned. She took out a shiny folded pamphlet, the kind they kept stacked in clear plastic stands in hospital waiting rooms. How to come out to your parents, she read aloud.
Luke, don't be ridiculous. Simon's not gay. He's a vampire.
I recognize that, but the pamphlet's all about telling your parents difficult truths about yourself they may not want to face. Maybe he could adapt one of the speeches, or just listen to the advice in general.
Luke!
She spoke so sharply that he pulled the truck to a stop with a loud screech of brakes. They were just in front of his house, the water of the East River glittering darkly on their left, the sky streaked with soot and shadows. Another darker shadow crouched on Luke's front porch. Luke narrowed his eyes. In wolf form, he told her, his eyesight was perfect. In human form, he remained nearsighted.
Is that...
Simon. Yes.
She knew him even as an outline.
I'd better go talk to him.
Sure. I'll, run some errands. I have things to pick up.
What kind of things?
He waved her away.
Food things. I'll be back in a half hour. Don't stay outside, though. Go in the house and lock up.
You know I will.
She watched as the pickup sped away, then turned toward the house. Her heart was pounding. She'd talked to Simon on the phone a few times, but she hadn't seen him since they brought him, groggy and blood-spattered, to Luke's house in the dark early hours of that horrible morning to clean up before driving him home. She'd thought he ought to go to the Institute, but of course that was impossible. Simon would never see the inside of a church or synagogue again. She'd watched him walking up the path to his front door, shoulders hunched forward as if he were walking against a heavy wind. When the porch light came on automatically, he flinched away from it, and she knew it was because he had thought it was the light of the sun,
and she started to cry. Silently, in the back seat of the pickup, the tears splashing down onto the strange black mark on her forearm.
"Clary," Jace had whispered, and he'd reached for her hand, but she'd recoiled from him just as Simon had recoiled from the light. She wouldn't touch him. She'd never touch him again. That was her penance, her payment for what she'd done to Simon. Now, as she mounted the steps to Luke's porch, her mouth went dry and her throat swelled with the pressure of tears. She told herself not to cry. Crying would only make him feel worse. He was sitting in the shadows at the corner of the porch, watching her. She could see the gleam of his eyes in the darkness. She wondered if they'd held that sort of light in them before. She couldn't remember.
"Simon?"
He stood up in one single, smooth, graceful movement that sent a chill up her spine. There was one thing Simon had never been, and that was graceful. There was something else about him, something different.
"Sorry if I startled you."
He spoke carefully, almost formally, as if they were strangers.
"It's all right, it's just... how long have you been here?"
"Not long. I can only travel after the sun starts going down, remember? I accidentally put my hand about an inch out the window yesterday and nearly charred off my fingers. Luckily, I heal fast."
She fumbled for her key, unlocked the door, swung it open. Pale light spilled out onto the porch.
"Luke said we should stay inside."
"Because the nasty things," Simon said, pushing past her. "They come out in the dark."
The living room was full of warm yellow light. Clary shut the door behind them and flipped the deadbolts closed. Isabel's blue coat was still hanging on a hook by the door. She'd meant to take it to a dry cleaner to see if they could get the bloodstains out, but she hadn't had a chance. She stared at it for a moment, steeling herself, before turning to look at Simon. He was standing in the middle of the room, hands awkwardly in the pockets of his jacket. He was wearing jeans and a frayed I Heart New York t-shirt that had belonged to his dad. Everything about him was familiar to Clary, and yet he seemed like a stranger.
"Your glasses," she said, belatedly realizing what had seemed strange to her out on the porch. "You're not wearing them."
"Have you ever seen a vampire wearing glasses?"
"Well, no, but..."
"I don't need them anymore. Perfect vision seems to come with the territory."
He sat down on the couch and Clary joined him, sitting beside him but not too near. Up close she could see how pale his skin looked, blue traceries of veins apparent just beneath the surface. His eyes without the glasses looked huge and dark, the lashes like black ink strokes.
"Of course I still have to wear them around the house or my mother would freak out. I'm going to have to tell her I'm getting contacts."
"You're going to have to tell her, period," Clary said, more firmly than she felt. "You can't hide your condition forever."
"I can try."
He raked a hand through his dark hair, his mouth twisting.
"Clary, what am I going to do? My mom keeps bringing me food and I have to throw it out the window. I haven't been outside in 2 days, but I don't know how much longer I can go on pretending I have the flu. Eventually she's going to bring me to the doctor, and then what? I don't have a heartbeat. He'll tell her that I'm dead."
"Or write you up as a medical miracle," said Clary.
"It's not funny."
"I know. I was just trying to..."
"I keep thinking about blood," Simon said. "I dream about it, wake up thinking about it. Pretty soon I'll be writing morbid emo poetry about it."
"Don't you have those bottles of blood Magnus gave you? You're not running out, are you?"
"I have them. They're in my mini-fridge, but I've only got 3 left."
His voice sounded thin with tension.
"What about when I run out?"
"You won't. We'll get you some more," Clary said, with more confidence than she felt.
She supposed she could always hit up Magnus's friendly local supplier of lamb's blood, but the whole business made her queasy.
"Look, Simon, Luke thinks you should tell your mom. You can't hide it from her forever."
"I can damn well try."
"Think about Luke," she said desperately. "You can still live a normal life."
"And what about us? Do you want a vampire boyfriend?" He laughed bitterly. "Because I foresee many romantic picnics in our future. You drinking a virgin piña colada, me drinking the blood of a virgin."
"Think of it as a handicap," Clary urged. "You just have to learn how to work your life around it. Lots of people do it."
"I'm not sure I'm people. Not anymore."
"You are to me," she said. "Anyway,
Being human is overrated.
At least Jace can't call me mundane anymore.
What's that you're holding?
He asked, noticing the pamphlet still rolled up in her left hand. Oh, this? She held it up. How to come out to your parents. He widened his eyes.
Something you want to tell me?
It's not for me, it's for you. She handed it to him.
I don't have to come out to my mother, said Simon. She already thinks I'm gay because I'm not interested in sports and I haven't had a serious girlfriend yet. Not that she knows about, anyway.
But you have to come out as a vampire, Clary pointed out. Luke thought maybe you could, you know, use one of the suggested speeches in the pamphlet, except use the word undead instead of...
I get it.
Simon spread the pamphlet open. Here, I'll practice on you. He cleared his throat.
Mom, I have something to tell you. I'm undead. Now, I know you may have some preconceived notions about the undead. I know you may not be comfortable with the idea of me being undead. But I'm here to tell you that the undead are just like you and me.
Simon paused.
Well, okay, possibly more like me than you.
Simon!
All right.
He went on.
The first thing you need to understand is that I'm the same person I always was. Being undead isn't the most important thing about me. It's just part of who I am. The second thing you should know is that it isn't a choice. I was born this way.
Simon squinted at her over the pamphlet.
Sorry, reborn this way.
Clary sighed. You're not trying.
At least I can tell her you buried me in a Jewish cemetery, Simon said, abandoning the pamphlet. Maybe I should start small. Tell my sister first.
I'll go with you if you want. Maybe I can help make them understand. He looked up at her, surprised, and she saw the cracks in his armor of bitter humor and the fear that was underneath.
You'd do that?
Clary began, and was cut off by a sudden, deafening screech of tires and the sound of shattering glass. She leaped to her feet and raced to the window, Simon beside her. She yanked the curtain aside and stared out. Luke's pickup truck was pulled up onto the lawn, its motor grinding. Dark strips of burned rubber laid across the sidewalk. One of the truck's headlights was blazing. The other had been smashed, and there was a dark stain across the front grille of the truck, and something humped, white and motionless, lying underneath the front wheels. Bile rose in Clary's throat. Had Luke run someone over? But no. Impatiently she scraped the glamour from her vision as if she were scraping dirt from a window. The thing under Luke's wheels wasn't human. It was smooth, white, almost larval, and it twitched like a worm pinned to a board. The driver's side of the truck burst open and Luke leaped out. Ignoring the creature pinned under his wheels, he dashed across the lawn toward the porch. Following him with her gaze, Clary saw that there was a dark shape sprawled in the shadows there. The shape was human, small, with light braided hair.
That's that werewolf girl, Maya. Simon sounded astonished. What happened?
I don't know. Clary grabbed her stele off the top of a bookcase. They clattered down the steps and dashed for the shadows where Luke crouched, his hands on Maya's shoulders, lifting her and propping her gently against the side of the porch. Up close, Clary could see that the front of her shirt was torn and there was a gash in her shoulder, leaking a slow pulse of blood. Simon stopped dead. Clary, nearly crashing into him, gave a gasp of surprise and shot him an angry look before she realized. The blood. He was afraid of it, afraid of looking at it.
She's all right, said Luke, as Maya's head rolled and she groaned.
He slapped her cheek lightly and her eyes fluttered open.
Maya? Maya, can you hear me?
She blinked and nodded, looking dazed. Luke, she whispered. What happened? She winced. My shoulder.
Come on, I'd better get you inside.
Luke hoisted her in his arms, and Clary remembered that she'd always thought he was surprisingly strong for someone who worked in a bookstore. She'd put it down to all that hauling around of heavy boxes. Now she knew better.
Clary, Simon, come on.
They headed back inside, where Luke laid Maya down on the tattered gray velour couch. He sent Simon running for a blanket and Clary to the kitchen for a wet towel. When Clary returned, she found Maya propped up against one of the cushions, looking flushed and feverish. She was chattering rapidly and nervously to Luke. I was coming across the lawn when I smelled something rotten like garbage. I turned around and it hit me.
What hit you? Said Clary, handing Luke the towel.
Maya frowned. I didn't see it. It knocked me over, and then I tried to kick it off, but it was too fast.
I saw it, said Luke, his voice